I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Let the individual states make their abortion policy. In Minnesota, what we did was restore Roe versus Wade.
Vice presidential candidates go head-to-head in a national debate. Neither candidate voiced support for the preborn.
Nebraska is facing very historic election here with the abortion issue. We have two competing ballot initiatives.
Dueling abortion measures in Nebraska has pro-life advocates urging voters to cast votes for the lesser of two evils.
What we are doing right now is we are helping people to realize that the only alternative is palliative care.
And the alarming trend of assisted suicide in Canada. We speak with the new Archbishop of Toronto on how the church is promoting life.
I never supported a national ban. I did, during when I was running for Senate in 2022, talk about setting some minimum national standard. For example, we have a partial birth abortion ban in place in this country at the federal level. I don't think anybody's trying to get rid of that, or at least I hope not, though I know that Democrats have taken a very radical pro-abortion stance.
How can we as a nation say that your life and your rights, as basic as the right to control your own body, is determined on geography?
Vice presidential candidates Senator J.D. Vance and Governor Tim Walz faced off in a national debate. Each candidate voiced varying levels of support for legalized abortion. With less than a month into the election, the latest debate finds that the pro-life movement lacks any real support from either party. The Democratic candidates are pushing federal abortion protections with no limits, and Republican candidates have steadily inched backwards on their once aggressive pro-life stances. J.D. Vance, a convert to Catholicism, formally said that the cause was the most important one worth fighting for, but has since said he would allow access to the abortion pill. During the debate, he avoided taking any strong pro-life positions, pushing pro-family policies and reiterating the Trump campaign lingo of leaving it up to the states.
As a Republican who proudly wants to protect innocent life in this country, who proudly wants to protect the vulnerable, is that my party, we've got to do so much better of a job at earning the American people's trust back. I want us to support fertility treatments. I want us to make it easier for moms to afford to have babies. I want it to make it easier for young families to afford a home so they can afford a place to raise that family. And I think there's so much that we can do on the public policy front just to give women more options. Let voters make these decisions. Let the individual states make their abortion policy.
Pro-life leader Lila Rose tweeting out that Vance lost the high ground and backing down on life will not help him this election. President Trump tweeting during the debate in part that he would not support a federal ban on abortion. He added that he supports abortion for rape, incest, and for the life of the mother, and that he does not support late-term abortion. David B. Wright, founder of 40 Days for Life and pro-life strategist, joins us now for analysis on the debate. David, in the debate, Tim Walz denied that his state allows abortion in the ninth month, despite the state reporting that five abortion procedures resulted in a born-alive infant who died shortly after. Can you talk about the reality of late-term abortions that few media outlets seem to want to acknowledge?
You bet. And thank you so much for the opportunity to share the truth about this. You know, this past week, even the Washington Post, not a friend to the pro-life movement, acknowledged that nine states, including Minnesota, Governor Walz's state, and the District of Columbia, allow abortion no matter the stage of development of the fetus up until the very moment of birth. And they acknowledged late-term abortion is real. It is happening. And so why is it that the Harris-Walz campaign is trying so hard to avoid talking about it? And why is the secular media running cover for them? It's because they know 90% of American voters, including those who are so-called pro-choice, oppose late-term abortion. And when people learn what late-term abortion is, it's a gruesome, barbaric practice. It is indefensible. And yet the abortion industry continues to perpetrate this crime against humanity. So it is important for those of us who know the truth to be able to expose and be vigilant in exposing the reality that late-term abortions are happening and share with people that this is what the Harris-Walz campaign is advocating for, unlimited abortion anytime, paid for by you and me, the American taxpayer.
Yeah, and religious freedom got a strong mention relating to forcing religious groups to provide abortions. Take a listen.
Some of what we've seen, do you want to force Catholic hospitals to perform abortions against their will? Because Kamala Harris is supported suing Catholic nuns to violate their freedom of conscience.
Vance paints a grim picture for religious orders and Catholic institutions. Do you think we'll have to fight abortion mandates once again?
I think it's a very real threat. When you have one side of the presidential ticket that wants unlimited abortion at all times, paid for by the taxpayer funding, they also want to impose that ideology on everyone. And we look at just what has happened during the Biden-Harris campaign and during their administration. We've seen weaponized government agencies targeting peaceful pro-lifers at gunpoint, arresting them, putting people in jail for more than a year, trying to impose abortion ideologies on pharmacies and Catholic hospitals and schools and religious orders, and trying to have mandates of contraception for those who are ideologically opposed to it. There is a lot at stake in this election, and it's important for all of us to vote for candidates who will not do everything they can to foist abortion onto every corner of the nation and maximize the harm caused to women and children. And instead, we need to vote for those who will limit the harm to women and to children. And for the future, we need to work to raise up better candidates who will advocate for the truth, the beauty, and the goodness of the dignity of the human person, the foundation of Catholic social teaching, and will champion that when they run for office and when they are in elected positions.
Well said. J.D. Vance listed all of the usual reasons society tells women that having children is a burden. While he was trying to advocate for pro-life family policies, here's a clip.
So many young women would love to have families. So many young women also see an unplanned pregnancy as something that's going to destroy their livelihood, destroy their education, destroy their relationships. And we have got to earn people's trust back. And that's why Donald Trump and I are committed to pursuing pro-family policies.
David, how can we change this narrative?
Yeah. First of all, we have to recognize that J.D. Vance has a strong pro-life track record. Donald Trump appointed the justices that overturned Roe versus Wade. However, the way they're playing this very politically and defensively, we have to change that narrative. And the way we do this is we tell the stories of women and children who are being helped this very moment by our nation's pregnancy centers and maternity ministries. More than 2,000 strong, coast to coast, these heroic ministries are helping women who are facing, yes, challenges of unexpected pregnancy, but they are walking with them, providing support and help so they don't make a decision they'll regret for a lifetime, an abortion decision, and so they can have a child that has a chance at life. We got to tell these stories better, and we got to help educate our candidates to tell these stories better. Moms who pursue pregnancy, who deliver a child, even in the midst of difficult circumstances, they are heroes. And we have to help more moms be heroes.
Amen. David B. Wright, founder of 40 Days for Life. Thank you.
You bet.
The National Catholic Register has more analysis of the vice presidential debate. Visit ncregister.com for more coverage and for this year's voter's guide. A judge says the state of Georgia can no longer enforce its pro-life laws starting Monday. The judge ruled that the law banning abortions after 6 weeks is unconstitutional. Abortions are now legal in Georgia up to 22 weeks of pregnancy. Louisiana's new law classifying abortion pills as a Schedule 4 controlled substance took effect this week. Possessions of the drug without a prescription is punishable by up to 5 years in prison. It is the first law of its kind in the nation. Competing abortion measures will appear on Nebraska's ballot in November following a state Supreme Court ruling. One measure known as Protect the Right to Abortion, or Initiative 439, would enshrine abortion up until viability or later to protect the life of the mother. The second measure, Protect Women and Children, or Initiative 434, would cement Nebraska's current 12 abortion ban, with exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. The Nebraska Catholic Conference is calling Initiative 439 extreme.
It's very clear. Catholics in Nebraska should be voting against Initiative 439. It is an unsafe, unregulated, un-Nebraskan abortion proposal.
Matt Heffron, senior counsel at the Thomas More Society, which filed lawsuits against Abortion Initiative 434, joins us to talk about the fight for life in Nebraska. Matt, what are the claims in the lawsuit the Thomas More Society filed against the abortion ballot initiative? And can you describe the subsequent Supreme Court ruling?
I can. Like so many areas in the country, Nebraska has a single subject rule, which says that you cannot have in an initiative both two subjects that would confuse the voters so that they don't know if they're voting for one or both. And that is how we challenged it in Nebraska. The Supreme Court, it was a discretionary matter before the Supreme Court, as in many states, it was an original action to the Supreme Court done at warp speed. And the Supreme Court ultimately decided against us. And in fact, they have Supreme Courts have decided against every one of these that I can see so far. Thomas More Society also brought the case in Missouri. Our attorney there, Mary Catherine Martin. The problem with it is in so many of these initiatives across the country, they're all worded similarly. And what they do is intentionally deceptive. It is the bet is by these initiatives, these pro-abortion initiatives, that many voters will want a little bit of abortion, but not a lot. And so they term it in phrases that would make it sound like this is just a little bit of abortion, when in fact, most of them bring on unregulated late term abortion throughout the entire 9 months.
That's troubling. We've seen pro-abortion measures win in multiple state elections. What are the real expectations in Nebraska?
You know, I've heard just recently that it is now neck and neck. It's about 50% both ways, which is shocking because Nebraska has always been a pro-life state. We've had 50 years of abortion regulations that were popularly enacted. The difference in Nebraska is that we are the only state thus far that also has a competing initiative. And this initiative would basically enshrine constitutional protections for the baby in the second and third trimesters. It's a distinction because no other state has tried that. We're trying it because they have lost in other states. It's unfortunate because, quite honestly, 50 years of Roe v. Wade has educated people, if you will, or at least has convinced them that a little bit of abortion is okay. It's a shame.
And very quickly, before you leave, if the pro-abortion measure passes, what impact will that have on the pro-life movement?
It will wipe out 50 years of regulation. And in so many of these initiatives, including Nebraska, it allows for no regulation of abortion. We will simply pivot. And if I have only a second, I'd say to this, all citizens in Nebraska, all citizens in the other states, Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Maryland, Missouri, Montana, Nevada and New York need to get out on the streets. It's time for no one to be sitting on the sidelines. All Catholic parishes, all dioceses are very engaged right now in getting people out and spreading the word that this is a dangerous and deceptive initiative.
Thank you for that call to action. Matt Heffron of the Thomas More Society, thank you.
Thank you.
And don't forget to check out the Catholic News Agency's interactive map on state abortion ballots. Head over to catholicnewsagency.com and scroll to the bottom.
I medici che si prestano a questo.
Doctors that do this are, allow me the word, hitmen.
Sono sicari.
They are hitmen.
Sono dei sicari.
And on this you cannot argue.
E su questo non si può
you are killing a human life.
Si uccide una vita umana.
Pope Francis calling abortionists hitmen during his return trip from Belgium this past weekend. And it's not the first time he's used that phrase. His words were in response to a reporter's question about statements the Holy Father made while visiting a former Belgian king's tomb during his apostolic journey to Luxembourg and Belgium. During that unscheduled visit to King Bedouin's tomb, who Francis wants to recognize as blessed, Francis praised Bedouin for having abdicated for a day in 1990, rather than give his assent to a parliament-approved bill legalizing abortion. A constitutional workaround giving the prime minister power allowed the abortion bill to pass despite the king's conscientious objection. Francis called King Bedouin's move courageous and the abortion law, quote, homicidal. Abortion is legal up to 12 weeks in Belgium, but the country is seeking to extend that to 18 weeks, a pro-life issue that the Pope did not address, euthanasia and assisted suicide. Belgium reportedly has one of the most liberal euthanasia laws in the world, with no lower age limit, passed by Parliament in 2002 for those with constant and unbearable and incurable physical or mental suffering. More than 27,000 people have died since it was legalized. Belgium joins Portugal, Spain, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands as countries with legal euthanasia laws, despite their deep Catholic roots. Several other countries have varying legalities of assisted suicide, with some seeking to expand laws.
The church is very clear in its opposition to suicide, but at the same time, the church recognizes that there can be grave psychological issues at play that can severely impact the responsibility of an individual in committing suicide.
Assisted suicide is a concern one lawmaker here in the U.S. wanted to get ahead of by amending state constitution to prohibit the practice. While euthanasia is illegal in the U.S., assisted suicide is legal in at least 10 states, including California, Vermont, New Jersey, and Hawaii, according to pro-assisted suicide site Care and Compassion.
Yeah, so medically assisted suicide's rapidly gaining traction across the Western world. And it's just becoming increasingly common to use this as some sort of end-of-life option. In Canada, it's becoming very alarming to see the number of deaths. It's the fifth leading cause of death right now in Canada.
Voters in West Virginia will cast their ballots on banning assisted suicide this November. A study by a leading Canadian public think tank, CARDIS, reveals that Canada's medical aid and dying program is the world's fastest-growing assisted dying program. Cases have risen 13-fold since its legalization. A little more than 1,000 died in 2016. By 2022, that number jumped to more than 13,000. The new Archbishop of Toronto says the church in Canada is working to combat the rising culture of assisted suicide. Archbishop Francis Leo sat down with EWTN News President Monse Alvarado to discuss the disturbing trend.
You mentioned the young at heart who, particularly in today's age, are really the most vulnerable with the rising trends of euthanasia and medical aid in dying as a euphemism, I would say, for doctor-assisted suicide. How is the church countering this movement, and how can the church continue to give us a renewed understanding of the value of the elderly and the older generations?
You make a great point, absolutely. It is a travesty, honestly, that euthanasia is going strong, unfortunately, in different parts of the country more than others. Not only legalized, but being promoted. Mm-hmm. And assisted suicide, euthanasia, medical aid in dying, as you say. It's a travesty. Should never have taken place. We fought tooth and nail. The Conference of Catholic Bishops what we're doing right now is we are helping people to realize that the only alternative is palliative care. So there is a wonderful program that through the Conference of Bishops a few years ago that we're promoting, Horizons of Hope, that for many reasons euthanasia and assisted suicide is not the answer. The Lord has come that we might have life and life in abundance, John 10:10, one of my favorite passages. To live life abundantly here while we journey on earth and then enter into eternal life, the abundant life in heaven. But as we are here amidst the temptations and that are around us, we must keep firm in our faith, proclaiming the gospel of life and a civilization of love, which is both at the beginning of life in the womb and the end of life when people are so vulnerable and are tempted to suicide. We need to be close, and so we're encouraging our communities to set up groups in the parish to help people understand the evils of euthanasia and assisted suicide and the benefits of palliative care. And within an even larger context of life and the gift of life. And we have so many instances here. We have the Sisters of Life, mm-hmm. for example, who are a wonderful blessing in the Archdiocese. And many other groups and associations, religious orders, that are promoting life very much. And so we have this program, and we're trying to, here in the Archdiocese of Toronto, promote more and more palliative care, a sense of the sacredness of life. It's always a challenge because the culture, right, is not very welcoming to that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't scare us at all. But it is a challenge, and one to which we are engaged in, and with the strength of and the insights of the Holy Spirit, I think we will definitely do our best. And I've already seen, I've heard stories of people who, because someone went to their deathbed, and someone spoke to them about faith and about the love of God, they changed their mind, you know. And that's what we're called to do, to ministers of the Lord, of the new covenant, and of life.
To help people learn and understand and form their consciences and their hearts so that they realize what it really means when you end someone's life by coercion or even that passive
yeah. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill, starting with yourself.
Yeah.
And we worship the Lord of life, and He is the Lord of life and death. And so I think these are crucial issues that speak to the core of our Christian faith. And so we will continue to celebrate life, to promote life, and these life-giving issues like palliative care. And just this past summer, we had the Conference of Bishops in the Archdiocese of Toronto, in conjunction with the Pontifical Academy for Life, had a wonderful international interfaith symposium on palliative care.
Yes.
And we're looking forward to the fruits of that, how to strengthen the Church's proclamation of the gospel of life and encourage people to understand and the giftedness of life, the sacredness of life given by God. And so the challenge is there, but we're up to it.
Yeah, you're taking proactive steps, which I think is what we want to see from the Church.
Yeah.
To learn more about the Church's efforts in Canada to combat this culture of death, visit the Suffering and the End of Life tab on the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops website. Several Catholic universities are among dozens of schools with links to the abortion industry, according to a study by Students for Life America's Dimitri Institute for Pro-Life Advancement. The 2024 Christian Schools Project report says of the 732 Christian schools that investigated, more than 80 were found to have some sort of connection to Planned Parenthood or another abortion provider. Those connections include internship opportunities, linking to Planned Parenthood as a health resource, or as a volunteer opportunity. The Catholic schools listed on your screen were among other Christian schools in the report, including Notre Dame University, Sacred Heart University in Connecticut, and Boston College. Coming up, a public witness to life in every step they take. The race underway right now to promote life and pray for an end to abortion. That story when we return. The largest spanning pro-life event in the United States, Life Runners Across America Relay, is underway. It launched from New York, San Francisco, Fargo, and Austin a little more than 3 weeks ago. Welcome back to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. The participants walk or run 5,000 separate legs to make the shape of a cross over America, pausing to pray at abortion facilities along their routes. Pat Castle, president and founder of Life Runners, joins us now to tell us how far along these races are. Pat, these relay races started weeks ago. Where are the teams now?
Yeah, we're on day 27 out of 43 days. And the states we're currently in, we are in Colorado, South Dakota, Oklahoma, and Indiana. And as we pass through these states, making that cross that you mentioned, we're going to pass through 7 of the 10 states that have pro-abortion amendments on the ballot this coming election season. So it's a great time for encouragement for people to choose life, to vote for life.
That's incredible. When and where does the race conclude?
So the race will conclude in Roe Park, not associated with Roe v. Wade, but what a great name to have a celebration of life, in Overland Park, Kansas. And the last leg will be completed by the Benedictine College students with the blessing by Archbishop Nauman.
That's incredible. These relays and processions are made up of small moments on the ground. What are you hearing from runners?
Oh, people are just glad that they have yet another way to express their pro-life faith. And of course, life runners, a lot of people like to label us as a pro-life running ministry. We're actually a pro-life messaging ministry. There's 24,257 teammates in 3,541 cities across 47 nations participating in this largest spanning pro-life event. And all the teammates are wearing a shirt that on the back says, "Remember the unborn." While the world is working so hard to dismember the unborn, we're working hard to remember the unborn. And then, of course, on the front of our shirts is the Trinity, with the cross, the Holy Spirit dove, and then a reference from God the Father, Jeremiah 1:5, who reminds us that God knew us even before we were in our mother's wombs.
That's incredible. What a beautiful witness. Pat Castle, president and founder of Life Runners, thank you.
You're welcome. God bless you.
Before we leave you, we want to remind you that October is Respect Life Month, where Catholics are encouraged to dedicate time of service or prayer to promote life. Prayer is certainly needed at this moment in time before the elections, with multiple state abortion ballot measures up for a vote. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops provides a host of resources for parishes to use to take part in this annual dedication, including a special novena at the end of the month. We hope you'll take part in the novena starting on October 22nd to pray for an end to abortion. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, ewtn.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless you.